Okay, so last week we started up with Tzvilas Kelim, Simchachas Kelim, and Shamanar from Yerodea. We spoke about the basics. The mitzvah is most likely the Araisa, a couple of sheep that fits the Rabbanan, but we assume that it's the Araisa. Often you'll have to state those in what types of Kelim, or how exactly, mainly what types of Kelim need Tzvilah, and since we're assuming it's the Araisa, the subject the Araisa, the Chumrah means you should do Tzvilah, but at the same time, the subject Bracha Spakel, and very often we'll find you should do Tzvilah without Bracha. We're going to talk a little bit more about the process of doing Tzvilah. We mentioned Mayim versus Mikvah, both the Kasher. You should have Arbaim Sa'ah. You should have 40 Sa'ahs worth of water, which is basically the size of a standard human body, the volume of the size of a standard human body. Sort of a material based on the Pasuk, which describes, Klei Midyan, which is where the Tzvilah Mitzvah comes from. There are six different types of metal. There's Machlokes, if we include other types of metal in the rice or not. We said that the Gemara included glass, midi rabbanan. Ethan, I think you said about plastic. Seeing as you can melt down plastic, shouldn't that have the same hagdara as glass? So there is a shita, there's a shita ziyachet, the shuk ola brum, that says that plastic is like glass for exactly the reasons of Rav Shikibanta. Mainstream, though, in terms of fact, most of Acharonim say that plastic is puzzer. We don't add this to the Xera, even though you're right, it does have the same reason, because should be included in that in a second. We don't add this to the Xera. There are those who are machmir, there are those who say that what's the deal, she's just like dunking in the water and be done with it, but we generally assume that plastic kelim are puzzer and don't need to cover it at all. So we're gonna talk a little bit more about the process of tzvilah today. We're gonna talk a little bit more about which types of kelim, how exactly they define klei tzvilah and things like that. And hopefully finish off and a couple more like practical questions and hopefully finish off tzvilah today. That's the plan. So we said that Tzvilah only is only for Kelim, and you, that Jew, is buying from a non-Jew, right? So it needs to have it owned at some point by a guy, and then you're buying it, as you're buying it, if it's still owned by the guy, in like the classic Hadrama of borrowing it from a guy, if you're in Airbnb, anything like that, where the guy is still the owner of the Kli, or the Kelim, then you actually do not need to do Tzvilah. It's only when you're being kona from a non-Jew. A lot of questions, if there's a shutfos, if there's a partnership going on, if you bought the raw materials and a guy made it, if the guy owns the raw materials and a Jew made it, these are all discussed in the Shulchan Aruch and cooked up. But then we're not going to think it's relevant enough for us to get into that. One thing which is I guess commonly spoken about, but may not be common enough knowledge, is that what about things made in Israel? Right, if I buy something from the random place in Mea Sharim, I buy a kumkum, I buy, I don't know, anything, sakum, plates, knives, mugs, anything that I buy here in Israel, can I assume that it is made, if they own by, made by a Jew, and therefore would not need to be one? So that it used to be much more of a thing. Now it's very, very rare to find things that are actually manufactured outside of China. So even things bought in Israel, you'll see like whatever the brand name's on the back, and then either on a sticker or small letters in the back, somewhere on the container you'll find a sticker that says either manufactured in Chutzlaret, manufactured in China. Almost all kelim, no matter who's making them, the actual manufacturing is done in a factory in China. Obviously, it's being done by a non-Jewish company and being sold to the Jews. So in those situations, you are still chayav to do tzvilah. Tzvilah is still necessary. At the same time, there's a shtick that companies have started pulling, which apparently works where Benar said it's creative, but it seems to work very well, and you wouldn't even call it a ha'arama. Essentially, what people are doing is they're making deals with the factory, and instead of the Jewish company buying the finished product from the non-Jewish factory, from the factory in China, they're setting up the deal so that the Jewish company owns the factory and is paying the workers. And then the workers, I guess that's not really an official question, but if it's a Jewish-owned company and the money that they're paying is paying the workers or whatever it is, however they set up the deal, then it's seen as if the Jew is the one who's manufacturing the kaling, owned by a Jew the entire time, and then you would not need to be loaned. So it's the exact same amount of money being paid, they're just like routing it in a different way, and because of this, the stick that they're pulling, the way basically, the only thing that changes is the way they set up the deal, so the kaling produced in that way would not need to be loaned. And those kaling usually come with like a hashkafa, which is pretty funny, like a little tuda that says that this plea does not need to be loaned. I don't know if they have like a haskama or some sort of a stamp, I don't know what it is, but this is something which has been gaining in popularity, you might see it somewhere, and apparently that works very nicely. So, just to be aware, yeah.
Would a middleman like a shop owner be considered owning it?
No. That if you buy from a shop owner, you would still need to do tevila if the Hebrew is originally sourced from a guy.
And this was just from you mentioning goy, got it.
Yes. I think you would need tevila there also. That's a good, I'm not sure. Check with your rabbi, but I'm pretty sure you still need tevila there. Pretty sure you still need tevila. Okay, so things generally found in Israel, you would need to do tevila unless you have that tevila. Saying that it's fine. So for plastic, okay. So we're going to come back to defining klei tzuda in a minute. This is just trying to follow the order of the Shulchan Aruch. When you're doing tevila, we do two things you need to know. Number one, practically, how do I get this klei into the water? So let's say, I guess, what might you think the problem could be? Say, well, I have a pot. Well. Chazitza. Well, so chazitza number one, we have to talk about for sure. Chazitza is anything which is stopping the water from coming in contact with all surfaces of the sea, inside and outside. So what kind of things could be a chazitza? What things might be a chazitza? Let's say you bought a brand new pot that you're going to make noodles, illegally in yeshiva. What?
Sticker
is the classic thing that everybody talks about, and it's definitely a factor you need to be aware of. Where Ben Arsha's blessing was, the stickers on these pots are the mice of Satan. They're incredibly difficult to get off. They can be incredibly difficult to actually get off. If you pull it off the wrong way, then you have all the sticky residue, which you also need to get off because you don't want it there. The guiding cloth for chasitos, most of this comes from the actually halachas of Tzvilas Adam, in Hilchos Nida. It's basically the same rules. We talk about like Tzvila for Nida and for Tum and Tara. We also talk about it for Tzvila for Kevim. So the Gemara talks about, we actually had this Gemara in Sukkah, there's the Dinda Raisa and then there are Banu Del Raisa, anything which covers Rove of the Kli, and your Ma, or the person, and your Ma Gidan, is going to be Chatitza Halacha Moshe Sinai Del Raisa. Anything which covers either Rove of the Kli, even if you're not Makid, or a Mir of the Kli, but you are Makid, and the sticker generally is going to fit into that latter category, that's going to be a Chatitza Midir Abanan, you need to get it off. And then anything which is Mi Sheino Makid is not technically a chatitza. We usually still try to figure out why not, but it's not technically going to be a chatitza. The reason this can be so problematic, specifically with tevilas adam, like tevilas nida, is because it's a question about hair. Do we consider a person's hair as separate from their body, or do we consider it to be seen as part of the entire body? If it's seen as part of the entire body, then you're almost never going to have a chatitza which is both robe and makid. Like, what's covering a person's entire body? Has their makid on, they want to get off. Like, I can't imagine that would ever happen. However, if hair is seen as separate, and there are enough chitzos in the Rishon to say that's something we should try to be makid on, then if you just have like a few hairs that are not in, if your hair in a braid, maybe depending on the details, or wreath from the I think the CRC now, he spoke to Smicha, to the Smicha program when we were doing Pilchus Mikos, when we were doing Nida a couple years ago, and he told us about a case that he had with an African-American convert with her hair in cornrows. So like that is like the quintessential paradigmatic, like you can't get more of a chatitza b'se'ar than cornrows, and apparently it's like very difficult to take him out. She really didn't want to take it out, it was actually a big sticking point, and he spoke about ways to get around that as a chatitza for tzvila by gayers. So that's much more of a question by Nida and Gears and things like that. It doesn't come up as often by Caleb, but stickers are a great example of triggering a chasita midi rabbanan because of miyus hamakdid. What do, how do we define miyus hamakdid? So anything which you generally would want to get off of the kli, you don't want there long term, is going, that's basically the definition of makdid. I don't want it there. Most of these stickers, most of the stickers you have on table, the price tag or like whatever is manufactured, things like that, you don't want that on your kli. Like, you know, first of all, like, you don't want the price being advertised to everybody. It just like looks funny. It's not supposed to be there. If there are like instructions which are meant to stay on the kli, those are fine. Those you want to stay on, that's not a chasita at all. That can stay on the thing. And there's like a decal or some sort of decoration, which again is supposed to stay on the kli. You want that there. There's no reason to take that off. So yeah, you definitely should try as much as possible to get off those stickers which refuse to come off. You should try as many cleaning materials as is reasonable to get it off as well. If you have like kitchen cleaners, oven cleaners, anything which is like caustic and might help you remove that sticky residue, that you should do that. If it's really not coming off, then at that point you can say like, and you're not going to use the kli because of this stuff, then it becomes mia shaino, then it becomes mia shaino makid, and it would be fine. But really, you should be trying as hard as you can to take off all the stuff. I think if you did a tzedila with it and then you found the sticker on afterwards, you should take it off and do it again, I think. I should double check that. Okay, good. From the corner. From a Haredi cousin, okay? So I should try to double check that, but I'm pretty sure if you found the sticker afterwards and you realize, oh, I didn't want this there, then you should try to do tevila again. Okay, so that's a little bit on chasitos. Now, what about the hand that you're holding the kli with, right? Let's say that I have like a pitcher with a nice curved handle that I can really get my hand around. So I'm holding that handle pretty tightly, and I'm holding tightly because I see all the other kelim which were not held tightly at the bottom of the mikvah. Stuff in the glass ones, broken in shards, and it's like a bunch of sad, poopy forks that have been there for 50 years. Like, I don't want my nice new pitcher to get stuck at the bottom of the kelim mikvah, just like all those other ones. So I'm holding it pretty tightly. I dip in, I pull out, and it doesn't need to be in there for a long time. Is it possible that since I was holding onto that handle so tightly that it just didn't get wet when it doesn't come in contact with water, maybe that I was so safe that there's a chasita on the kli, the entire kli did not enter into the water at the same time, and that could be a problem. Maybe, you might think, even if it was a problem, can I just flip it around and dip in the handle? So no, that's an important cloud. When both for, again, tevilas adam and for tevilas kalim, the entire kli needs to be in the water at the same time. You can't do half and half. By hag'olas kalim, and we're going to talk about hesher kalim, that actually does work. What you're doing is, you can do like half a pot, flip it around, and do the other half of the pot, because what you're essentially doing is removing a tam from the thing. That's a very physical process. You just need to get the tape out of part A, flip it around and get the tape out of part B. That does work. But when it comes to tevilas kalim, both for its end, tevilas adam, I can't like dip half my body and come out and then dip in the other half. It doesn't work. You need to figure out some way to get your entire body under the water and the entire kli into the water at the same time. But that's the reason why they have mikvah. When women go to mikvah for nida, there's a woman who's standing there. First of all, she's outside the halachos to make sure did you do the cleaning properly. You know, chasitas, she has an extra pair of eyes, can be very, very helpful. But more importantly, that when the woman goes into the water, she obviously has no idea, is every single part of her body going under, especially her hair. Is her hair fully going under the water? Her hair often will float to the top and will hang out on top of the water. That would mean that her full body is not under. So part of the job of the mikvah ladies is to make sure that the entire woman's body, including her hair, has gone under. There's even a discussion between the Shulchan Aruch. If a woman, let's say, a couple in some random place, and they don't have access to a normal mikvah, what should they do besides like having the woman should have some sort of supervision, and ideally should not be her husband because she's not yet tahora, and therefore the husband shouldn't be seeing her if she's not dressed. But at the same time, somebody needs to watch to make sure that entire body has gone under the water. So how do you deal with that? Catch 22 is an interesting discussion, but we see it's important to have somebody who's overseeing to make sure, generally important to have somebody overseeing to make sure that the woman's entire body has gone into the water all at once. If you have like a pinky that's left outside, that's going to possibly entire tevila. So those two with a kli. You need to get the entire kli into the water for tevila and kalim all at the same time. So just flipping it, our pitcher around and getting the handle in, that's not going to work. So is it a problem for me to be holding on to this pitcher? If I'm holding on tightly, does it matter? Is that even an issue? So test. Yes, the short answer is that yes, you do need to be mounted. And how do you hold the cleat? And there are a few different options to avoid problems. Number one, this is actually just a bet in the Shofar from Kofak, says that you should be holding the cleat loosely. This comes from the Machlokes in the Kavos, the Mishnayot. The Tanakhama says, this is option number two. Tanakhama says you should wet your hand first, like dip your hand into the mikvah, and then hold that cleat using your wet hand to dip it in and take it out. If Shimon says, no, you don't need to do that, or you could do that, you don't need to do that, instead just hold on to it loosely. So it's not so clear. Tanakhama says you should do both things, both wet your hand and hold it loosely. Maybe if Shimon is saying both things, you should wet your hand and hold it loosely, or that each one is saying their own shita. The Tanakhama says only wet your hand first and then you can hold it as tightly as you want, and if Shimon would be saying only, the only thing you need to do is hold it loosely, you do not need to wet your hand beforehand. It's machlokas mishonim. What do we do? Basically, the machlokas pasuk is that you have either option. You can either go like the, you can either wet your hand first and then hold it tightly, or you can dip your hand in dry, hold it quickly, as long as you're holding it loosely. Yeah. The assumption is that by wetting your hand, it connects the hand that's holding the kli for the rest of the water in the mikvah, and will like allow the whole thing to penetrate. Practically, and how does that work? I'm not sure. But like the water on your hand is connected to the water in the mikvah, and the sum of the water on your hand is also enveloping the kli. Let's just say it that way, and therefore it's like the entire kli is coming in contact with the water.
Why do you have to wet your hand beforehand instead of just holding it and then moving your hands around the wall?
As long as you're making, these are two ways to make sure that water is directing the entire field at once. If you want to like do that quick like open and shut, that would work also. Then make sure that if it's just for 8 milliseconds, have the entire field enveloped by water, that would be great. You don't even need to let go. As long as you're holding loosely, that already is enough. If you have like a picture like that, holding it in a ring in your fingers and like bouncing it up and down, that would be great. Those are both two good options. Either getting your hand wet and then holding on to it tightly when you put it in the water, or just holding it loosely the entire time. The Shach doesn't love that. The Shach sounds like he thinks we should be machmir for the Rambam, and basically saying that you should wet your hand first. That's your best bet. Even if you're planning on holding loosely, best to wet your hand first. Just make sure you don't create a chafisa. The Pitzei Shuba says that it may be different because you have to remember context. Tevilah for some of the Tara might be more hungry than Tevilah Kalim. The stakes would be much lower, in which case we can afford to be a little bit more naked. So, and the Halacha Maisa, we pass them like the Machaber and the Rashba. So you have two options, either hold it loosely or wet your hand first and then you can hold it as tightly as you want to. The Rama says you should wet your hand with mikvah water, which is really not so hard. Mikvah is like right in front of your face. Just dip your hand in, pull your hand out, pick up the cleat, put it back in. I'm not even sure why you would want to walk to like the sink first and use mind shuvim or mind solution to wet your hand. It just seems to be less convenient. But it is a chumra that you definitely need to use the mikvah water, the Shach agrees. The Mata Yehonasan adds a point. He says that if you're doing that, if you're using the mikvah water and then you pull your hand out of the mikvah to pick up the kli, what have you just done? What would happen to the water that's on your hand? It becomes not that it's tummy, it becomes mayim shuvim. It becomes mayim solution. It's been disconnected from the mikvah. In which case, the only way to do this would you have to stick both hands into the water, and then you pass the kli from one hand to the other while your hands are still under the water. So make sure you haven't disconnected the water on your hand from the mikvah water. You don't want mayim solution, you want daf the mayim mechubarim. So you'd have to have both hands in, one hand holding the kli, one hand not holding the kli, and pass from hand one to pass to hand two so that the second hand is holding it while it's already wet with connected mikvah water. And so that's... Yes, yeah, so that's the Mati Anderson's like extra chumrah, and you will see people doing that. The Taz makes a pshara, you kind of make a compromise, depends how you're holding it. If you're going to hold tightly, then you should use mikvah and presumably connected mikvah water. If you're holding looser, then even mind solution would be okay, in which case you could take your hand out of the mikvah to pick up the kli, and then put it back in holding loosely. Now, most Afronim agree with the Taz's pshara. So just to review, how should I be dipping my kli? Practically, what should I do? So the best thing to do seems to be pick up the queen in one hand, have your other hand empty, put both hands into the mikvah at one time, and then pass from hand one to hand two while both hands are under the water. If it's something where you're comfortable holding it loosely, then the best thing then what you can do is you can dip in one hand, get it wet from the mikvah water, pull it out, and then pick up the clean, put it back in holding loosely, and then bring it back out. The third thing that you can do is often these kevah mikvahs will have like some sort of basket, like a plastic holding basket, that you can just dump all the kevah into or a bunch of kevah at a time, put them in, and this is really great for silverware, things like that, and then you just dump in the entire basket. Nothing's holding the kalim tightly, so water's able to flow around and get the entire thing in at once. That's a great move. You need to make sure you don't load up the basket too much though, because if you load it up too much, it's too heavy, then the kalim will be weighing down on each other, and there's a concern, there's a chashash that some of the kalim won't come in contact with the rest of the water. So you can do a few kalim at a time to speed things up a little bit. But you shouldn't be like dumping your entire wedding registry into one or two of these baskets, dipping it and pulling it out. That presumably would not work. When you have kalim with openings, like pitchers, pots, small cups and things like that, you need to make sure the water fills the inside also. And not just the outside water needs to come in contact with the inside of the kli as well. So easiest way to end time is cool. If you put a kli straight down into the water, it creates, I think, vacuum, it creates a bubble inside, and water actually does not get into the inside of the kli. So to avoid that, basically you just do it a little bit slower on an angle to make sure the water has a chance to fill up the inside of the kli as well. And then pull it out and wash it really well, because those mikvah kalim are usually not cleaned so often. One interesting thing to point out, you'll always see by like person mikvahs, not kalim mikvahs. You'll always see by person mikvahs that you are not, that it's strictly usur, strictly forbidden to use this mikvah as a kalim mikvah. You are not allowed to bring kalim into this mikvah. It's over here, you need to use a special kalim mikvah. So why is that? What's the issue? What's the problem? So I just wanted to hear that it's actually not a halachic issue. Part of it is like how it's like gross, but even if you're going to wash it very well, it's a very practical problem. Let's say you have like a glass plate or a glass pitcher or a glass cups, anything. Then you're totaling this mikvah and you drop it and it breaks the bottom of the mikvah. See, in the summer you're going to try to clean up as much as you can, but like you're not going scuba diving, you're not cleaning up every single last bit of glass. There's presumably going to be something left at the bottom of the mikvah. And then let's say that night, a couple nights later, the mikvah is being used as a mikvah for women, which is what I think 95% of the mikvahs are used for. So a woman is going to mikvah in that same mikvah, and she cuts her foot while she's dipping. What's the likelihood that she's coming back to that mikvah, or maybe potentially, depending on who we're dealing with, coming back to that mikvah in general? That's an incredibly negative experience. I'm sure she was not excited to find a glass piece stuck in her foot. There's a strong enough chance that's going to negatively impact enough on one particular experience that we're just that's going to stop us from coming to mikvah in the future. We are definitely not interested in facilitating that, and that's why you'll always see those signs. This is not a kalim mikvah, this is a human mikvah. It's not a halachic problem, it's just a practical experience problem. Yeah?
Well, we just have some medical reasons. There's no mikvah in town, but it's basically the kalim mikvah.
For a person? Yeah. Yeah, it's all the same stuff. It's all the same. It needs to be the same rainwater, 40 stuff. We assume 40 stuff. Usually they're smaller, and so it's a lot harder to get a person to do the one in by grit, by the gun, is like literally, and it's a little bit bigger than like the coffin size, but like it's a rectangle, three amos by two amos, something like that. Like if you really try hard, you can pull yourself in there, but like it would not be a pleasant experience. And most kalim mikvahs are like that. The human mikvahs are usually much nicer and larger and more of like a swimming pool or sauna size.
If a kli's not putting the whole touching the side of a mikvah the whole time, that
would
still be
effective? Like pushing, like stuff against the side, or gently pushing against the side? If it's gently, it should be okay, especially you can also like wet that part of the kli, or if it's under the water, then also it's going to be, it's the same way you wet your hand, and you're okay. Having the side wet or having the kli wet would also avoid that problem. If it's like really pushing hard and you feel like it's stuck against the wall, then you should try to find a different angle. But not yet. Okay. There are some kaolins, the some kaolins which are too big to deal with. You just like can't find a kaolin temple which is large enough for these kaolins, like the yeshiva's kolin pots, or the yeshiva like the Marashat Kolel soup pot. These like industrial kaolins are huge, they're incredibly large, and it can be hard to find a kaolin temple which can deal with them. So what do you do? So the one option, I'm not sure how practical it is, but one option is if you can have a craftsman make a hole in the kli, which would make it no longer run by boda, makes it no longer usable, right, as a tashmish, you can make it no longer usable for tashmish, and then, again, a Jewish craftsman fixes that hole, then it's seen as if it's becoming a kli, the day Yisrael, it's seen as becoming a kli in the hands of a Jew, and then it would not need to be loved because it was created by a Jew. It was never seen in its history as being owned by a guy. You can do the same thing, sometimes you can do the same thing for electric kalim. It needs to be like broken to the extent where like a stam random yeshiva shagai couldn't, not a yeshiva shagai, like a balabayas. It needs to be broken to the extent where a balabayas can't put together himself. It needs to be significantly broken. That it takes an uan, it takes somebody who's like a craftsman, an expert, to be able to fix it. But that would be one way of avoiding the need for tevila, that's seen as the Jew creating it in the first place, which would be great. The bracha that you make, I think we mentioned last time, it's either al tevila keli or al tevila kelim if you're doing multiple kelim. If you're besuffing, for example, like a pocket knife, right? You can be, if you're totaling a pocket knife, you do this in a gilu all the time. You have the actual blade, like the actual knife part of the pocket knife, which you don't use, which you want to use. There are also other parts of the knife which could theoretically come in contact with food or be used for food that you're going to be totaling as well. So what bracha should you make? Is that one clear? Is that multiple kelim? So for steakos like that, you should say the bracha of al tevilas kelim. The kelim could either mean multiple kelim, like we just said, or it could mean on the mitzvah of tevilas kelim, in which case it doesn't really matter how many you're doing at a time. So the appropriate bracha to say in a circumstance of stuffing would be al tevilas kelim. There is a shita to say al tevilas klematos or al tevilas, but we usually pass in just al tevilas keli or al tevilas kelim. Okay, so then in terms of defining Kli Suda, this is like what a bulk of the Sif and Shulchan Aruch spend on. It's things which are used directly coming in contact directly with food and used at a stage where the food is ra'u la'achila. So let's say the Shulchan Aruch discusses a shechita knife or a flaying knife. Shechita knife is clear, we know what shechita knife is. A flaying knife is after you've already shechted the animal. A flaying knife is something that you use to help get the leather off, the skin off. It's a specialized type of knife. It's obviously it has a blade, but it's formed in a specific way. I think they're usually shorter, maybe like a little bit of a curved tip, if I remember correctly. So those two types of knives presumably don't need tevila. They're not really called Kli Suda. They're not used. You're definitely not using a shechita knife as a meal. And it's not even used one step before for the food preparation. It's like multiple steps before the meal. So they don't really need tevila maker at din. The Rama says, yesh kolkin, and it's tov, it's ideal to be tov without a bracha. What is that machlokas based on? Why would there be something to argue? So there are a few different svaros. The Shach says that the knife could easily be used for edible food. If I was a rich guy and I was really good at sharpening sheep knives and I didn't really care to get a pagan in my sheep knife, I could use my sheep knife for a steak and it would probably be working incredibly well. It's very, very sharp. It gets some really like nice sharp corners. I could theoretically use it for a steak. I won't, but I theoretically could. So a kli which is rubbery for edible food, like a shechita knife, like a flaying knife, then you can do tevila without a bracha. The Ramad in the same says that matzah, like you know those homemade little rollers for matzah. Anybody who like has made matzah in their lives has seen those roller things with a bunch of pins to make holes in matzah so it doesn't swell up so much. So those homemakers are useless aside from prepping matzah. Those will never be used in any sort of edible food capacity, and therefore they're agreed that those will never need to be left. That was one story. There are others. It might depend on how important the kli is in like processing the food. And then there's actually machlokas nowadays between the star K and the OU. The star K is making it like the shach. The OU is not like a different svara. You should be matmir and kelim which are used as part of like the process of food prep, but not for the step up or the step before. But you can rely on the shach if you're stuck if necessary. We spoke about can openers, we spoke about, I think we said, corkscrews for wine bottles. Neither of those need tevila, even though the can opener might touch some of the food. It's not meant to be, it's not prepared food, it's not really meant to be touching food, so we don't really care if it accidentally touches something. The Shulchan Aruch does discuss a lot of these different things, we're not going to go through every single one. Fine. What about Airbnbs, borrowing or renting a kli from a goy? So as long as the goy still owns the kli, it does not need tevila, I can still use it. Obviously, you need to deal with the kashrus concern. The easiest way to get around that is either to do hagala or kasha or whatever kli you're going to be using, or you just use it with kol. Where generally, you're not allowed to use trays, kalim, even in your own house. If you accidentally like tray up a milk and spoon, you should not be using that spoon for your breakfast cereal and just say like, oh, I'll get around to tobling or kashing it at some point in the future, but for now, like, why not? It's cold, and therefore there are no bulios, there are no salmon, there's no issues. You should not be using trays, kalim in your own house, even balai, even temporarily. But if you're in somebody else's house, you're in a goy's house for a week, or you're in a hotel for a night, or whatever it is, then you are allowed to use cold kalim balai. The concern, obviously, in your own house is you're going to get mixed up. You're going to forget which spoon is the one which got trays. You'll get mixed up into your silverware during the year of problems. That's not going to happen in an Airbnb. It's not going to happen if you're in a hotel for a couple of nights. So those are situations where you're living balai for a few days. It would be fine to use even trays kalim, obviously, as long as they're clean, with cold food. If you really want to be safe, you're going to be using it. You want to use it with hot food, then you'd have to do hagalah. You'd have to be mashu the kli, and then it would be fine as well. But tevila is not something that you need to deal with. If you rent a Jewish Airbnb, which can definitely happen here, but you are not confident or you know, either one, that the owner didn't do tevila, then there actually is a fee to be not build those kalim. Those are Jewish-owned kalim, presumably bought from a guy unless you know otherwise. And you obviously, you're not buying it from a Jew. This is still owned by that other Jew. So he was hiding tevila. If you want to use his kalim for stuff for Klei Suda, you need to make sure they get tevila first. If the owner bought it for in a, it doesn't really happen often. Fine. Halachah might use total metal. That was fighting with that one, sorry. So if you're in that situation, then you are hired to be matbil. Probably better to be confident in who you're renting an Airbnb from. If it's a Jew, you should just ask him, did the kalim undergo tevila? If they didn't, you're not going to want to schlep all the kalim out to kalim mikvah. So you're not going to want to do that work to the guy, unless he pays you, I guess. Or maybe that could be a good deal. Like, I'll do all the tevila to kalim if you give me, like, two nights for free. That could be a great deal. Regardless, you cannot use this kalim if they have not undergone tevila. Yeah, let's say you don't know whether tevila was done, and for whatever reason you cannot ask the owner. I don't know if it's uncomfortable to ask the owner, or he's just not around and you can't ask him. Then it depends on how not knowing the guy is. If it's like a less educated Orthodox Jew who may or may not know about tevila, meaning he's part of the framework of halacha, there's just something, he didn't have the strongest education, the strongest upbringing, and you're not confident that he made it to that stiff and shulchan aruch about tevila kalim, then you can be down like hafsus and assume that they killed wolves. The Mishnah of Brura claims, and this is their Rabbanan, to use kalim that have not undergone tevila, so for something it would be okay. Most people have a cheskes kashrus. Obviously, cheskes kashrus always depends on the area of halacha that we're dealing with, aside from Sol Shabbos, that's the middle category. If they're really not Orthodox, though, then it's a pretty low odds that they did tevila. But they're still Jewish, obviously, that would still be a problem. What about eating in a house or a restaurant where you know that they didn't total the dishes? The non-firm relative question. Sometimes it could be parents, if we have an NCSY. If an NCSY has been involved in the program and he's getting the program and he found out about TUF Kalim, he knows that his non-firm parents, his stomach did not use to do up. So what should that guy do? If it happens every so often, it's a dangerous move. If your parents didn't do tevila, wait till they go out for an extended, for like, I don't know, send them out on a night, like parents' night out, for a full day, and then get you and your siblings to shower, to run everything from kalim mikvah, do a very quick run, and then redo the kitchen, like rearrange the kitchen, maybe like hash the kitchen at the same time, or not. try to take care of all your problems in one fall swoop. Rabbanan thought that was a generally dangerous move. Like if you drop one plate, like the whole game is up, they're going to find out, you smash the thing, they're going to get upset, why are you messing up our kitchen, getting so religious. That is not necessarily the smartest move. Okay, it could create problems. If you really feel confident that you can pull it off without any problems, maybe it's one way to do it, it's one way to go, but not necessarily the smoothest move. Where Moshe says, haka, it's usher to eat if you know you're dealing with kevim which are not underground tevila. The only kula, which is like, not the biggest kula, is that if they serve you something on a plate, you're allowed to eat it. What function is the plate actually serving? It's holding the food, it's like keeping the tablecloth clean. Like that's the only point of a plate. So if you assume that the plate is only to keep the tablecloth clean, it's not really clay suza, it's just like keeping something off the tablecloth, but you wouldn't be allowed to use silverware, you would not be allowed to drink from a cup, you can't say the same thing with a cup, that's what they're like. The cup is not just keeping, the bowl is crucial, the bowl is necessary, you cannot eat cereal off the table, like off the tabletop, it just won't work. So all those other cases, according to your Moshe, it's really not going to work. The Ravadia has a kula, the food based up here in Shlomo Zalman has a kula. Halakha Maisa, you can rely on Shlomo Zalman and we should base Avi if you're stuck. Definitely not something you should go for, like, Milchatila. It wouldn't apply to, neither of those svaras would apply to an Airbnb that you're renting from a Jew, though. That's really going to be a problem. If you're at somebody else's house and there's no way of getting around the Tefillah issue, then you have what to rely on. But yeah, definitely best if you can get plastic plates, you can talk about that beforehand, anything like that. That would be plastic, yes, but that would be ideal. Well, it's a little bit complicated to go into. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, this is one that we actually saw from Rav Shechter, I think last week, running out of time, that the only time you're not allowed to use a kli without it having undergone tevila is when tevila is possible. Rav Shechter had that for electronic appliances. So there they're abundant. Now you're scared about tevila. You can be tovil somebody else's cave, which is generally not practical, it's not really shy. Maybe if you're borrowing them, if you're renting them, then you can do it, but if you're just a guest in a restaurant, you're a guest in somebody else's house, then you cannot, it's not feasible. And once it's not feasible, the gzeres does not apply. The derabanan does not apply. So that's a svarah, we don't love it, but kedai hu mitmokhu lo b'shat
l'chak. So say you use a cake that someone else has been gifted to you, you don't use it with silverware, but they cut it with a knife.
I mean, your interaction with food is...
You can use your hands, because they cut the cake.
Yeah, I hear the question, I'm pretty sure that's okay, but worth asking. I think that's okay. Good. The last few simanim I'm not going to go into. The Jewish owned factory, we said that's good now. That's the two dug on the kelim made in China. There was one last thing. Candles do need to go into the mikvah together with the kli itself. They're seen as buckle, even if they're different material. Let's say like you have a wooden handle for a metal frying pan. The wooden handle needs to go in together with the kli, it's seen as part of the kli itself, and therefore needs to get into the water at the same time. Moshe has a chiddush, you can actually call the electric cord of a kli a separate kli, and therefore that doesn't need to be well. Practically, Moshe and Rav Loew hold that way. Practically, there's not much of a problem with just cutting the plug as well. It's not going to ruin the plug. We already spoke about how you deal with electric kelim. Just let it sit for a good 3 days before you plug it in. Fine. Rust is a chassid problem. Stickers and lights and stuff on. If nobody cares about it, like it's on the bottom, then you can leave it on. If it's instructional, you can leave them on. If it's something that's impossible to come off, that's by definition ein chose. It's seen as part of the kli. That's interesting. Okay, and then we talked about Shatanim and non-Jews. You are allowed to have a non-Jew do tzvila for you, but you need to have an Omer Al-Gaba. You need to have a Jew. You need to have a Jew who has Ne'emanus, basically above Chiyuv and Mitzvos, who's watching the guy. Same thing for a Katan. The Katan can do the act of tzvila, but you need to have somebody watching to make sure that it actually happens. That's an interesting stuff about Katanim and Mitzvos in general. I'm not going to go into this. Ooh, okay. Finally, the last thing is just about that haram we started this whole section with. Giving a kli to a guy and borrowing it back. So that's really seen as not l'chasiva. We don't love that solution, especially because the longer it goes on, the more it becomes clear that you're not actually borrowing it, he gave it back to you. If he gave it back to you, then it's just as high in tzvila as it was marriage. So it's brought up in the context of if you forgot to do tzvila before Shabbos or Yom Tov, then you can't do tzvila on Shabbos and Yom Tov because that left mirek in talking kli. It looks as if you're fixing the tzvila, that's like a makabah type of thing. So you can't actually do the tzvila on Shabbos or Yom Tov, What you can do is you can lend it, you can give it to the guy and have him lend it back to you. But that's meant to be very temporary. And ideally, you should be going straight to the mikvah after Shabbat to total that clean to use it long term. The Rama says, if necessary, you can use this during the week also. But again, we don't love it. The Taz says explicitly, this is only for a short time. It's not meant to be a long term solution. The Chachmas Adam does allow for indefinite. So like for using it indefinitely, that's really what it seems to be. A lot of people do rely on, are relying on, Sammy's relying on all these different situations. But ideally, it's definitely not ideal. If it's electric kalim, you don't have a choice, or if people feel like they don't have a choice and they're afraid to do the tevila, then fine. But you should at least be lending it to the guy and giving it to the guy and borrowing it back. Do you have that to rely on? Fine. If you use the kli without tevila, you're not supposed to do that. We said that you were over on the edge of the Rabbanan, but the food does not become trait. Right? So maybe that's your case question, Eitan. The food doesn't become trait, it's just you weren't supposed to do that. You did something wrong. Do tshuva and try again at night. Last thing, there is no heter using a kli before tevila. You're using a kli one time. But yeah, I don't know if you've heard, have you heard this before. You can use all kalim, even if they're chayv and tevila, you can use it one time without tevila first. It was like out there, I've heard this before. Ruben Arsha thought that it came from a guy who never learned the difference between chesed and gabra, that a disposable kli can be used because the chesed is not a kli. Somebody saw that and said, wait a minute, they're using this kli once and throwing it out. It must be that a gabra is allowed to use a kli without tefillah kelim, I guess just one time. That's not true. There's an important difference between disposable kelim, which are not mukda, which are not considered to be kelim themselves, and therefore obviously don't need tefillah, and actual kelim, those need tefillah before you use it even one time. So then, if somebody who wants to reuse like an aluminum foil pen or something, that is fine. You don't assume that you're changing it from disposable to non-disposable. Once it's made in a disposable way, even if you're going to be using it, you're going to use it as many times as you can. But some of you're not going to get like past 5-10 uses, and then you're going to have to throw it out, which shows you that this is a disposable kli. Once it's a disposable kli, it's not defined as something which actually needs to be left. There were 6 or 7 different svaros. We spoke about the Snapple bottle situation last week. There were 6 or 7 different svaros as to why a Snapple bottle doesn't need to be left. A bunch of different svaros. A lot of them are very cool. I'm not going to go into it now because we're out of time. But end of the day, unless the bottle itself is like super chashuv, unless there's something unique about the Snapple bottle that you bought, which would give it its own chashivos separate from the drink, you should be okay with reusing it multiple times. If there is something unique, it's like a 50th anniversary something, it's like a collector's item bottle, then there actually is chashivos to the kli, and it should not be reused unless you use it for tevila. It's not going to come up so often, but I guess important to know. Okay, good. Finally, if a ger needs to do tevila, when a ger is megayer, does that mean he needs to total all of his kalim when he converts, or maybe like, do they convert along with him? But it is a machlokas, but it makes sense to be machmir in that case. Okay, that finishes out tevila kalim.